The wedding ceremony and feast to celebrate the marriage of Lord Narger and the two Tamosian princesses was the most lavish ever recorded. Taita recalled that it far exceeded in splendour any of those of either Pharaoh Tamosa or his father, Pharaoh Mamosa, both divine sons of Ra, may they live for ever. To the common citizens of Thebes, Lord Narger gave 500 head of prime oxen, 2 lighters of millet from the state granaries, and 5,000 large clay pots of the best beer. The feasting continued for a week, but even the hungry mouths of Thebes could not devour such quantities of food in so short a time. The remains of the millet and meat, which they smoked to preserve it, fed the city for months thereafter. However, the beer was another matter. They drank it in the first week. The wedding was celebrated in the Temple of Isis before both pharaohs, 600 priests and 4,000 invited guests. As they entered the temple, each guest was presented with a commemorative carved jewel, ivory, amethyst, coral, or some other precious gemstone, with the guest's own name engraved upon it between the names of the regent and his brides. The two brides came to meet their groom on one of the state carriages, drawn by the sacred white, hump-backed oxen, driven by naked Nubian coachmen. The road was strewn with palm fronds and flowers, and a chariot drove ahead of the wedding coach, throwing rings of silver and copper to the deliriously happy crowds that lined the way. Their enthusiasm was due in no small measure to Lord Narger's largesse of beer. The girls were clad in cloud-white linen of gossamer quality, and little Mary Cara was almost weighed down by the gold and jewels that covered her small body. Her tears had cut runnels through the coal and antimony makeup. Heseret squeezed her hand tightly to try to console her. When they reached the temple, they were met by the two pharaohs as they disembarked from the great state coach. Nepho whispered to Mary Cara as he led her into the nave of the temple, "Don't cry, little kitten. Nobody is going to hurt you. You'll be back in the nursery before your bedtime." To register his protest at the marriage of his sisters, Nepho had tried to avoid the duty of leading his little sister into the sanctuary, but Taita had reasoned with him, "We cannot prevent it happening, although you know how we have tried. Narger is determined. It would be cruel of you not to be there to comfort her in this most dreadful episode of her short life." Reluctantly, Nepho had acquiesced. Close behind them, Apepi led Heseret. She was as lovely as a nymph of paradise in her snowy robes and glittering jewellery. Months ago she had come to terms with the fate the gods had apportioned her, and her initial dismay and horror had slowly given way to curiosity and a sneaking anticipation. Lord Narger was a magnificent-looking man, and her nurses, handmaidens, and playmates had discussed him in avid detail, endlessly pointing out his more obvious virtues, and with breathless giggles, speculating in salacious detail on his hidden attributes. Perhaps as a consequence of these discussions, Heseret had recently been experiencing intriguing dreams. In one she'd run naked through a lush garden on the bank of the river, pursued by the regent. When she'd looked back at him over her shoulder, she saw that he was also naked, but that he was human only as far as his waist. From there on down he was a horse, exactly like Nepho's favourite stallion, Stargazer. When he was with the mares, she'd often seen Stargazer in the same amazing condition as the regent now exhibited, and she'd always found herself strangely moved by the sight. However, just as the regent caught up with her and reached out a bejewelled hand to seize her, the dream ended abruptly, and she found herself sitting bolt upright on her mattress. Without realizing what she was doing, she reached down and touched herself. Her fingers came away wet and slippery. She was so disturbed that she could not sleep again and pick up the dream where it had broken off, although she'd tried hard to do so. The next morning she felt restless and irritable and took out her bad temper on all those round her. From that time onwards, her girlish interest in Merrin began to fade. She saw him seldom these days, anyway. Since the death of his grandfather at Lord Narger's hands, his fortune had been forfeit, and the family had fallen into disgrace. She came to realize that he was an impecunious boy, a common soldier without favor or prospects. Lord Narger's social rank almost matched hers, and his fortune far exceeded her own. Now she kept a demure and chaste demeanour as Apepi led her down the long hypostyle gallery of the temple to the sanctuary. Lord Narger was waiting there for the bridal party, and although he was surrounded by courtiers and officers in fine costumes and magnificent uniforms, Heseret had eyes for him alone. He wore a plumed headdress of ostrich feathers to emulate the god Osiris, and stood tall above even Asmor and Lord Trok, who flanked him. As Heseret approached him, she became aware of his perfume. It was a blend of essences of blooms from a land beyond the Indus, and also contained the precious ambergris, found only rarely on the seashore, a bounty from the gods of the ocean depths. The aroma stirred her, and she took the hand that Narja offered her without hesitation, and looked up into those fascinating yellow eyes. When Narja offered his other hand to Merikara, she burst into loud sobs, and it was all Nefer could do to comfort her. She sobbed softly at intervals during the long ceremony that followed. When at last Lord Narja broke the jars of Nile water to mark the culmination of the ceremony, the crowds gasped with amazement. The waters of the great river, on whose bank the temple stood, turned a brilliant blue. Around the first bend, Narja had caused a line of barges to be anchored from bank to bank, and at a signal relayed from the temple roof, they'd released jars of dye into the waters. The effect was breathtaking, for blue was the colour of the Tamosian dynasty. Narja was declaring to the world his new pharaonic connections. Watching from the roof of the western enclosure, Taita saw the river change colour and shuddered with a sense of foreboding. It seemed for a moment the sun darkened in the tall Egyptian sky while the blue waters took on the colour of blood. But when he looked up, there was no cloud, no passing flock of birds to dull its rays, and when he looked back down, the waters were once more cerulean blue. Now, Narja is of the blood royal, and Nefer is stripped of even that protection. I am the only shield he has, and I am one man and old. Will my powers be enough to turn away the cobra from the fledgling falcon? Give me your strength, divine Horus. You have been my buckler and my lance down all the years. Do not forsake me now, mighty God.